2 weeks from this weekend, is Bananas' time for preparing for Passover. And one of the things that, let's go to Numbers, something or other, 15, I think. No, it's not. It's Numbers 9. Numbers 9. I grew up on the desert in Arizona. Or actually in the foothills of the desert, but there's a phenomena that occurs almost anywhere you go in the world where there are populated areas of major amounts of people. Normally there's a population center. No, I shouldn't say anywhere in the world. Anywhere where there's mountains. There's a population center, then there's a barren space, and then there's a mountain. I mean, if you go, it's true in New Mexico, it's Arizona, it's true in the Himalayas, it's true in Europe, except in Europe they don't have barren spaces really. But there's a thing that happens when you start to go towards a mountain, and you look at the mountain and you're convinced that it's like, you know, it's maybe 5 miles away. And you look out and then you go 5 miles and it seems like it's now, it doesn't look like it's 5 miles away, it looks like it's 45. And my point is, it's like an endless trek to get to the mountain. And the reason is that normally in the mountain atmosphere, there is no humidity. And so it plays a trick on our eyes that distances seem a lot nearer than they really are. And so that's what Israel was faced with here when they first came to the mount in Sinai and then again in the mount in Jerusalem. They got in this area and they saw this mountain here, and they intuited that there was something special about that mountain. But they got really scared, so they didn't go up the mountain. They just sent Moses up the mountain. And they said, I don't want God to talk to us. I don't want to hear anything from God. You go up there, and then you tell us what he said. Well, then they got over to Jerusalem, and in Jerusalem, they have to go to the top of the mountain. They have to go to the mountain. And it's a metaphor for a trek, an eternal trek that we're all on. My hobby when I was very young was mountain climbing. And I wasn't very young, I did it for a long time. And there's a fascination with mountain climbing that is like nothing else that I ever experienced. I mean, I can't believe anything else that I'd work my ass off for that long a time, work that hard, just to get to the top of this silly place, and then so I have to come back down again. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. But there is something in us, or at least there was in me, and I think there's always a fascination with mountains that's native to us in some mysterious way. All the ancient societies, in some way, all had sacred mountains. And the Himalayas, it's not Mount Everest that's a sacred one, it's a Mount Kailas that's one of these perfectly formed mountains, and then around it there are seven peaks that you have to sort of get up to before you can get to the real mountain. In Greek culture, of course, it was Mount Olympus. In all of the ancient Indian cultures, they all have sacred mountains. But we have a sacred mountain too, and it's called Mount Zion. And when we sing the Psalms of Ascent, it's not by accident. It's Psalm 120 to 134, and it's the Psalms of Ascent. They're only meaningful once your ascent begins, of going up to the mountain. Now, one of the things that if you've accepted that God is a viable possibility in your life, then one of the things that you're automatically interested in is guidance. What do I do is the biggest question. What do I do? Well, when you're not really here unless you come out of Egypt, until you come out of the world. Then you wander around this area here that's relatively flat. And so guidance takes on a certain form in this flat area. You go through the, even when you come to the law, it's still fundamentally flat, because if you notice, Israel transformed or transversed this incredibly mountainous region in Mount Sinai by walking through the valleys. They really didn't ascend until they got to Jerusalem. And you can see the this chart, topographical, is that the way you say it? Topographical chart indicates their trek was through the valleys, and they just sent Moses up to Mount Sinai. They didn't go up there. So guidance becomes the issue. What do you do? I mean, if you've come to a conclusion that God isn't something that you're only concerned with after you die, then you're concerned with guidance. So let's go to Numbers 9. Numbers 9 starts, the first part of the ninth chapter is all about the Feast of Passover. And it's the Passover is the celebration of your exodus from the world, from the world system. And it's got all these things about whether you're clean or unclean. It's got talking about journeying and all this good stuff. And then verse 14 it says, "And if a stranger shall sojourn among you and will keep the Passover unto the Lord, according to the ordinance of the Passover and according to the manner thereof, so shall he do. You shall have one ordinance, both for the stranger and for him that was born in the land." And then it's strange, because in the ancient rabbis, if things were in the scriptures, if things were right next to each other that didn't make sense to be right next to each other, that means you really better pay attention. Like the law of the first fruits, then the next half of the scripture says, "And you shall not see the kid in its mother's milk." Well, what the hell does that mean? Well, so that meant whenever there was something in the Bible where it looked like there was a total and complete departure from what the subject was, it was the indicator to the rabbis that this is a mystery. You better pay attention. Well, here we got all these great laws about Passover and about strangers doing Passover with you. And then in verse 15 it says, and it's a whole new subject area. He says, "And on the day that the tabernacle was reared up, the cloud covered the tabernacle, namely the tent of the testimony. At even there was upon the tabernacle as it were the appearance of fire until the morning. So it was always. The cloud covered it by day and the appearance of fire by night." Now the cloud didn't appear to Israel until they were at the juncture ready to cross over into the... They were ready to go through the sea. And there was a humongous army of Egyptians chasing them. And they were locked in because there were two mountains on either side of them, the sea in front of them, and this Egyptian army coming behind them. And just when... And they didn't... I mean, who would have thought the sea was going to part? I mean...
It's okay, the sea's going to part.
Yeah, the sea's going to part. Right. So they were scared. They knew something about fear, because they were closed in, encompassed. Rick and I talked last night about the idea that in the Greek word for this position of being, you're walled in on both sides of you by the circumstances of your life. There's an army of enemies chasing you from behind that's rolling up the toothpaste tube, and you got to get squeezed through one teeny little hole. I mean, well... The word for that condition is in the Greek is thlespis, and it means it's what we translate as tribulation or as suffering. It's thlespis, and it means you're about to be squeezed through a toothpaste tube. And you think, well, I got squeezed through it last year at Passover. Well, the hole is smaller this year. The passage of time is simply making that hole in the toothpaste tube smaller each year, until at the final Passover, the hole is smaller than the eye can see.
Another sieve.
Right. So here we are. We got about several million Jews. They have no weapons. They have nothing on their back. They've lost everything. The only thing they have on their back is pieces of the unleavened bread. They've got a few jewels that they've stolen from Egypt that the Levites are carrying around. But fundamentally, there's a mountain on one side, a mountain on the other side, and an army. Well, just at the time in which it seemed impossible, before the Red Sea opened, a cloud appeared. It's the first time the cloud appeared in the scriptures. It's the first time the cloud will appear in you. When the Egyptians looked at the cloud, they saw it as the worst storm cloud you can ever imagine. It looked like a hurricane was going to come upon the desert, which is impossible. And it scared them. The scriptures say it discomfited them to see this incredible cloud. On the other side of the cloud where Israel was, when they looked at the cloud, they only saw shining brightness. So that discomfited the armies that were chasing them, and it gave hope that something could be done to the nation, to the people. Now, some of you are in a position where all you see is the army coming after you. You don't know that the cloud is about to come down to separate you from your enemies, and that cloud is going to scare them, and you don't know that when that cloud settles, when you look at it, it's going to give you hope. Now, this is the heritage that you have as a rightful inheritance. There is no army that can be attacking you. There is no condition that can affect you that will not be whereby you will not be separated from it by this cloud. Now, that's just the beginning of the process. That cloud defines what's called your sanctification. Sanctify is where we get the word holy. In the Greek, it's hagios. It means that you are holy. It means you're a saint. Not by anything in your condition, but by the fact that a cloud has separated you from the world. You didn't define the cloud. You just said, I've had enough. When that takes place, then the promise of God is that a cloud is going to come down and separate you from all that is troubling you. The only problem is, if you read Isaiah 5 and you read it later, some of you have tried to take, and you sin, as it were, with a cart rope. And you've got this long cart rope that you're dragging, carts of stuff and baggage from Egypt. You're trying to get it across the Red Sea and trying to get it into the promise. And so that's, God's got to come on and cut those ropes so that there is no tie. There's no thing that connects you back with that condition of life that has become your enemy. So the cloud's first function was to separate you, to sanctify you, to protect you. That's why we say before the Seder meal, blessed art thou, O Lord our God, King of the universe, who has sanctified us, who has guarded us, who has kept us, who has allowed us to reach this time. The cup of sanctification and the wine we drink before the Seder meal is a testimony to that cloud that has sanctified us and now we trust will keep us. Now let's see what happens next. You all know the story. Then Moses finally took the rod and went boom and the sea separated. They marched through. The army was killed. Defeated. The enemies were defeated. Well, but their trek had just begun. So is your So in your case, the trek has just begun. Now you've got to traverse this desert. And so all this took place at Passover, so that's why this cloud becomes your only form of guidance. Now let's read about it. You've all read it before. In verse 16, so it was always. The cloud covered it by day and the appearance of fire by night. Now the New Testament, the essence of the gospel is that the cloud is covering the tabernacle. That's the only thing God cares about. Well, now the tabernacle, since the cross, the tabernacle is you. You are the tabernacle of the Lord. You are carrying the mercy seat, the Ark of the Covenant within you. But you still have this situation going on. You still got the appearance of enemies. So you still have the appearance of confusion that, oh, I've got to do this, I've got to do that, I've got to do this, I've got to do that, what am I going to do about this, what am I going to do about that, oh my God, Wooly doesn't like me, oh my God, I'm scared of Wooly, oh my God, this is going on. It's all bullshit. So you got the tabernacle of God. He has chosen to tabernacle himself within you. That's the gospel. Now you have a guidance system. And so it was always. The cloud covered it by day and the appearance of fire by night. And when the cloud was taken up from the tabernacle, then after that the children of Israel journeyed. And in the place where the cloud abode, there the children of Israel pitched their tents. At the commandment of the Lord, the children of Israel journeyed. At the commandment of the Lord, they pitched. As long as the cloud abode upon the tabernacle, they rested in their tents. When the cloud tarried long upon the tabernacle many days, then the children of Israel kept the charge of the Lord and journeyed not. And so it was, when the cloud was a few days upon the tabernacle, according to the commandment of the Lord, they abode in their tents. And according to the commandment of the Lord, they journeyed. And so it was, when the cloud abode from even unto morning, and that the cloud was taken up in the morning, then they journeyed. Whether it was by day or by night that the cloud was taken up, they journeyed. Or whether it were 2 days, or a month, or a year, that the cloud tarried upon the tabernacle, remaining there, the children of Israel abode in their tents, and journeyed not. But when it was taken up, they journeyed. At the commandment of the Lord, they rested in the tents. At the commandment of the Lord, they journeyed. They kept the charge of the Lord at the commandment of the Lord by the hand of Moses. That defined their lives. Now, since the cross, the cloud is whenever you are in a position where you're faced with more than one courses of activity or a choice. By definition, if you have a choice to make, that means the cloud is down. Do you understand? By definition, that is doubt. If you have to move between two or more possibilities in terms of courses of action, that's doubt. Now, doubt is a pejorative word in our mind. We think doubt is a negative thing. Doubt isn't a negative thing. The idea of having more than one choice is simply the Holy Spirit's work in you to tell you to wait. To wait. To journey not. To stop. No matter what the senses say, you stop. Now, you're in the desert. We're walking around here in the desert. But they spent 39 years in Kadesh Barnea in the sanctuary of the wilderness. We're not going to spend that long there. Right now, Bananas is in the sanctuary in the wilderness. So it's time to get the hell out of here. Now, but you see, you're on a flat piece of ground. And so you got a cloud coming down, and you're saying, well, I'm going to do this anyway. So you go, and you walk a little ways, and you start walking. Even though the cloud is there, but you don't get destroyed. All you do is you might fall on your face or something, and you might trip over a rock, or a beast might scare you or something. But now, we're about to start a new thing. We're about to start climbing this mountain, Mount Zion, so that you will have total control and dominion over your high places. Now, as you're climbing the mountain, if you've ever been a mountain climber, you know that there are certain conditions. If the cloud comes down over the mountain, you had better not move. Because if you move, you're not going to just fall off a rock or trip over a rock. You're going to fall 20,000 feet or 10,000 feet. So now the cloud in its guidance of you has to be far more sensitive than it was when you were walking on the flat ground. You can't ignore it. If you are faced in any condition of your life with more than one course of action, then there's no decision. That's why I've said always, a believer never, ever, ever, ever has to make a decision. Never. You walk. The cloud is down, you're faced with more than one course of action, you stop. When you're in the desert, the flat ground, you can wander around and do your own thing, and you're not going to get hurt. But when you start to climb upward, to truly take dominion over your high places so that you can inherit the promise that's on top of the mountain, which is represented by Jerusalem, the New Jerusalem, which is the mercy seat, then as you walk up that mountain, there's narrow pathways, really narrow. And if there's a cloud down, you better camp out right where you are. To take a step when the cloud is down, when you're on the mountain, is disastrous. You understand? The guidance system has remained the same, the cloud. But now your senses must be exercised far greater than they were in the desert. Now, if you're faced with more than, of course, more than one choice of action, if you're faced with a choice, in the silliest, smallest things of your life, you better stop. Because with God, there's no big choices or no little choices. There's only choices. There's only conditions. God says it's a sin for you to make a choice. Now that'll get you in trouble if you tell that to anybody. They're running around telling you to choose Jesus Christ as your personal Savior. That's apostasy. If you still have enough strength left to make a choice to choose Him, you will automatically choose the Antichrist. You will choose the one that will minister to you, not the one that will cost you your life. So now we are walking up a mountain as a body of people. We are tied together with tethers. Just as you are in a mountain climbing expedition. So that your safety depends on Rick's obedience. That's why now, in the desert, you can wander around and do little things, but once you start to climb, you must be a body. Because you're tethered, you're tied, we are tied directly to each other. Now, begin to be attuned to the cloud. For my sake, I don't want to fall off the mountain by you pulling me down. Begin to be attuned to that still small voice of the Holy Spirit that says, wait a minute, if I have to choose between this and this and this and this, if I have to even choose between this and this, I wait. No matter what the senses define, no matter what friends or relations, no matter what mind, I wait. And that's the heritage of walking up the mountain. Now, what is crazy position? Even Jesus said, He is the way. Does that mean, for us, because you still see separation between you and He, then you have to think in these terms. If you knew you were totally crucified, as the scriptures declare, I am crucified with Christ, nevertheless I live, then you speak as the oracle of God, you think as the oracle of God, you just are. But now because you see and believe the one great lie that there's separation, you have to think in terms of this climb. Now, can you understand that in mathematics or even in philosophy, the tip of the mountain encompasses the whole? I mean, if you're on top of the mountain, you possess the whole. It's like, but to get to the top of the mountain, you have to traverse all these peaks. There's seven of them in your spirit. There's the first ones that define, I won't go to them all. But that's those peaks in the spirit are where you've gone to worship, where you've gone to, you know, all of your worshiping activities. You've all, you've heard me say before, you've all prayed 24 hours a day. You're praying to the wrong God. You've all tithed, but you've tithed to the wrong God. You've all sacrificed. It's what you give breath to, but you're sacrificing to the wrong gods. In one real way, all that you've done thus far in your life is found out which gods aren't worthy of your time. Now, there's still some others left up there. There's still some other gods that are competing for allegiance with the Holy One of Israel. Well, this trek up the mountain is the exposing of those gods, those false gods. But God's way of exposing them to you is this cloud. You understand? The walk is getting more and more, you know, from in the New Testament talks about the way is getting narrower and narrower and narrower. But it's not only getting narrower and narrower and narrower, it's getting steeper and steeper and steeper. Now, we are going on a journey. It's the most exciting journey in the face of the universe. There's nothing else like it anywhere. And the journey is to possess, to be on, not possess in terms of an evil way we think of it, but possess in terms of being on top of it, Mount Zion. Because that's the place where the New Jerusalem is. That's the place where the mercy seat is. Now, everyone's invited. But there'll come a time, there'll be, you know, if you have an if you're on this mountain climbing expedition, and as you're climbing up, time after time after time on the lower ridges, the guy always falls. Eventually, he'll be left behind. But in the spirit, that's not because he isn't strong enough. In the spirit, it's because he's too strong. He's the one that's continually, you know, took a stand on his own. That's why in the spirit, in our weakness, in our confession, in our openness one to another, then that path is secure. And the promise is then we can ride on. We used to have to go up and worship there at the high places, and they'd scare us and all this stuff. Now we can ride on the high place. You can play on the high places. You can be totally free on the high places. But you've got to go. We've got to take this trek up this mountain. Thus far in Bananas, we've just been in the desert. It's been flat. So you could go off on your own and, you know, you fell off a rock or something. Got ran into a cactus. Got a little sticker in your foot or something. You're scared to death of a Gila monster. But when you start the trek up the mountain, and this is what this is. This is this trek that we're on, the spiritual trek, is the climbing of the highest mountain in the world, in the universe. It's the mountain that encompasses all points. You've got to begin to pay serious attention to that cloud. You can't ignore it anymore. If there's the slightest doubt, if you think you have to make a choice, wait, we'll wait with you. Understand? I don't want to talk anymore.
Yeah, well, why don't we move to the next room.
Take it, big guy.
We put you.